Chapter 17. Now as I was administering the affairs of Galilee in this way, Yohanan, son of Levi, stood up against me. Indeed, he was already aspiring to be a general, and setting himself on greater things. But a lack of resources was holding him back. But when he observed that I was greatly enjoying his activity, he persuaded me, indeed, first, to entrust him with rebuilding the wall of his hometown, a project in which he would make a large profit at the expense of the wealthy citizens. Now, I had proceeded with my fellow elders from Tiberias to Gishalav to see Yohanan, because I wanted to ascertain his intentions. But I soon found him bent on revolutionary activities and harboring a powerful yearning for the government. For he requested that I authorize him to make off with the grain belonging to Caesar, which was lying in the villages of Upper Galilee. For he said that he wanted to spend the proceeds on the repair of the walls of his fatherland. But since I had detected his design and what he intended to do, I did not give him my consent. For I had in mind to reserve the grain either for the Romans or for my own use. Now that I had been entrusted with authority over activities there by the Jerusalemite commonality. But when he was unable to persuade me about these matters, he turned to my fellow elders. For even they were careless about the consequences and quite prepared to take bribes. Now he corrupted them with money in exchange for their vote that all the grain lying within his province should be handed over to him. Alone and defeated by two, I kept quiet. And then Yohanan complimented this knavish trick by contriving a second, very shrewd trick. He first insisted that all the Judeans of Syria should avoid using olive oil unless it had been dispensed by a compatriot. For there were Judeans living in Philippi Caesarea who had been confined by the order of the king's viceroy and were liable to judgment. And Yohanan claimed that these Judeans, since they had no pure olive oil available to use, had sent a request to him, asking that he make provision for them by furnishing a solution, so that they would not violate the legal standards by having to use the Hellenic variety. So he applied for permission to send it to them at the frontier. Now Yohanan did not say these things out of regard for piety, but on account of the most blatant, disgusting greed. For he knew that among those in Caesarea, two sextarii of olive oil were sold for one drachma. But in Gishalav, 80 sextarii, that is, 4 amphoras, were sold for 4 attic drachmas. So he sent for as much oil as there was there, even appearing to have received authority from me to do so. For I did not agree to do this willingly, Instead, out of a fear of the multitude, if I had refused, I would have been stoned to death. Now therefore, with my consent, Yohanan used Tyrian coinage to buy what 4 Attic drachmas could buy, and he would then sell a half amphora for the same price. Now, since Galilee is particularly productive with olives, and at that time had certainly been very productive, and since a large amount had been sent to those who needed it, and since he was the sole supplier, he gained considerable money from this sordid business. And he immediately began to use this uncountable hoard of resources against the one who had furnished him with the task. Now, after I had dismissed my fellow elders from Gish Halav to Jerusalem, I began to make provision both for arms and for the preparation of fortified cities. Now, I sent for the most intimidating of the brigands. Indeed, I realized that disarming them would be impossible. But I persuaded the multitude to provide them with wages.
"It is better," I said, "to give a little bit voluntarily than to stand by watching our possessions being plundered by them."
And after I had bound them by oaths not to come back into the country unless they were summoned or in the event that they did not receive their pay, I dismissed them and transmitted a message ordering them not to make war either on the Romans or on their neighbors. For my primary concern was to keep peace in Galilee. Now I realized that indeed I could win the powerful Galileans over to my side if I shared authority with them. But the entire multitude, if I issued general orders through countrymen and familiar men. Indeed, I selected 70 of the most prudent of the aged men, establishing them as chiefs of all Galilee. But I established 7 others in each city as judges of less significant disputes. For I directed that the larger matters and the murder trials be sent up to me and the 70. Now I wanted, although under a pretext of friendship, to retain these 70 Galilean magistrates as hostages of their faithfulness. So I designated them to be both my friends and my travel companions. I also used to take them along with me when I tried cases, and I used to render verdicts in accord with their decisions, endeavoring not to pervert the rightful punishment through haste, and to also remain pure of any material profit in these matters. Now this was how I settled the legal issues for each city pertaining to the people's dealings with one another. Now I also enlisted a force of more than 100,000 young men out of Galilee. While training them, I equipped them with the old weapons which had been collected. Then I realized that the Romans owed their invincible strength primarily to prompt obedience and armed exercise. Indeed, I abandoned the teaching obtained by practice. But seeing that the Romans' prompt obedience was due to the multitude of their commanders, I divided my army in Roman fashion and appointed more squadron chiefs. For I both created distinctions among the soldiers and, indeed, put them under decurions and centurions and then tribunes. Above these, there were commanders in charge of bulkier legions. Now, I taught them how to transmit signals and how to sound both the advances and the retreats on the trumpet, as well as the sounds signaling both assaults and wheeling movements on the horn, and how it is necessary, indeed, for the part that is making headway to turn back toward the one that is becoming weary, but to share the sufferings of the part that is laboring. Also, whatever was conducive to the fortitude of soul or endurance of body, I would expound. But above all, I was disciplining them for the war by constantly dilating on the orderliness of the Romans, and that they would be fighting against men who, through their strength of body and determination of soul, had nearly dominated the entire inhabited earth. But I declared that, even before they went into a pitched battle, I would test their obedience to the war command, whether they would abstain from the familiar acts of unrighteousness, such as from both theft and brigandage and plunder, and from both defrauding their compatriots and regarding the harm of their own closest friends as personal gain. For the wars which are conducted most fairly are those in which all those enlisted in military service have a good conscience. But those who are deprived inside the house have to contend not only with their enemies who confront them, but instead also with God as a foe. These were the ways in which I persistently encouraged them. And indeed, the force which was ready for battle, which I had welded together, was indeed comprised of 60,000 infantry, but 350 cavalry. Now apart from these, about 4,500 mercenaries, in whom I had particular confidence. But I also had a picked bodyguard of 600 men. Now the cities began readily maintaining the rest of the army, with an exception of the mercenaries. For each of the cities sent out a half of its men and retained the rest for procuring them with supplies. This was how they separated, indeed, some to arms, but others to work. And those who sent the grain were furnished with protection from the heavy-armed soldiers in exchange.